So, today, good four-letter words are our subject. I wonder what the four-letter words are going to be. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campbell, California, with the Absolute Philosopher. Good four-letter words. Now, what could they be? How about love, look, true, find, seek, grow? I'm sure there's lots more. I'm sure there's lots more. And we can't even begin to say how many four-letter words there are, because if we wanted to play the game and we wanted to have instant information on that, what we do is take out our Scrabble dictionary. And our Scrabble dictionary has one-letter words, two-letter words, three-letter words, four-letter words, a lot of four-letter words. Now, the four-letter words that come to our mind are not always the pleasant ones. They're not unpleasant, but they're not. They have been given a bad rap, and they've been called bad words. And we don't need to mention them. But the four-letter words that have been given a bad rap are ones that children love to use, because it gets a response from their elders. It's what they use in the prison, and they use it just every second word. They use a four-letter word, because that shows how manly they are, you know, and how important they are. But really, the four-letter words that we are considering today are kind of powerful. Let's look at the first one, love. What can you do with love? Love makes the world go round. Love makes the world go round. Isn't that something? Mm-hmm. Love is the cement of the universe. It keeps everything together. Love is the bond of a family. Love is what a man and a woman have for each other when they want to establish a family. It's not a three-letter word, it's a four-letter word. Love. Love is whatever people do when they have an enjoyment in the other. They say, I love you. They don't say, I like you, which is fine too. But to say, I love you. Now, can you go around and have as your primary word, love? Can you think, this would be fun to do. When we were in elementary school, I told you the other day, our teacher would give us a list of words, and so we'd learn that list of words, and we'd learn all the synonyms that go along with the word, because that was good. And some of our synonyms were very far out, but good. They were really good. Now, if we had a program, say for a month, and every day we took a four-letter word, and we lived it, thought it, breathed it, talked it, lived about whatever it meant. Now, is that loving? Were you loving that person when you did that? Were you loving that situation when you did that? When you opened your mouth, you are so ghastly. You opened your mouth and you swallowed a bug. That bug didn't do anything to you, but you swallowed it. And when you drink that water, you're drinking all of those microbes and all that stuff. You look in there with a microscope. And what do you see in there? You see all those little creatures swimming around. And then you just, in one great big gulp, boom, take them all in and give them a new home. Give them a new lifestyle. And then they come out later, perhaps. I wonder, have they ever follow the lifestyle of the bugs that go in a glass of water? Do they all come out the same way? Perhaps more nourished by the body nutrients and so on. But where do they go? Do they just stop and pile up in the body and make a mess? You know? Well, that's possible too. They come out as part of the mess. But love. What is love? Well, we have a little dog whose name was King, and we changed it to Love. He's a little love now. Aren't you love? He's a little love. And his greatest joy in the entire world is getting a treat. Nothing else matters to him. If there are treats around, or that he's got a possibility of getting one, or we might drop it on the floor accidentally, he is there first. And if the other dogs eat their treats and break them up and they fall on the floor, he is there, the vacuum cleaner, cleaning up all the little pieces, which is good because it helps us from having to pick up the little pieces. But he just goes in there and just has a ball. Everything, everything. He loves to eat. Now, you'd think that that would make him a great big fat dog, but it doesn't make him fat. It just makes him lovable, more and more lovable. And you see, think of all the possibilities of love. Rex just came inside from being outside, and he got himself a little stick. He broke it off from one of the bushes, and he was waving it around saying, "Look what I got, I'm a golden retriever, and I retrieved this stick. I retrieved it right off the bush." And that's beautiful. But you see, those are things that Rex loves to do. We walk along the path, and he's on his leash, and he'll leap forward because he knows he'll get the arc coming back, and he'll grab a branch, and by the time the leash is too short, he's got that branch broken off, and he's carrying it along like the greatest trophy in the world. He thinks that's just wonderful. And sometimes he leaves sticks along the path, and his friend Ellen is not very nice to him. Ellen takes these sticks and throws them off the path where he can't reach them when he's on the leash. If she'd leave him on the path, then he could pick him up and carry him the next 20 feet, as he does. But, I mean, yeah, that's what he does. So when he finds the sticks along the path, he picks them up, carries it for as long as he wants to carry it, and then he drops it and takes something other interest, you know. If he's off the leash, then, of course, whatever he does, you know, he just has a ball. I think while he's off the leash, he loves to walk our property. And while I walk only 3 miles, he's walked a dozen miles and been just as happy as can be. But that's what love is all about. That's what love is all about. And Ingeborg, she is a crazy lover. She just goes over by her cat, and she takes her cat, and she says to that mangy old rattle-tattle thing, "I love you, I love you, I love you." And in a period of a couple months, the cat changed from an unhappy cat because it was abandoned and because it had all the burrs in it and stuff like that, to the most beautiful, gentle, loving cat that you could ever imagine. Yes, and very happy about it. Very happy about it. And this is part of what love is all about. Let's take another word. Look. What do you look at in life? Do you look at beautiful things, or do you look at things that are a problem? Oh, I got to pick that up. I got to do that. That's dusty. That's dirty. That's bad. That's all sorts of things. Hey, if you were to walk in this house right now, it's not too bad right now, but if you were to walk in this house right now, and you were to look at the kitchen, see, we've just had lunch, and we put the dirty dishes on the counter. We haven't finished putting everything away yet. And you look at the kitchen, you say, "What a dirty, dumb kitchen, what a filthy thing, dishes all over the place." But if you were in love, if you love a beautiful kitchen, you would look at that kitchen, you wouldn't see the dishes. You wouldn't see the food on the counter, you wouldn't see anything. You'd only see the beautiful counters and the beautiful cabinets and the glasses in the glassware cabinet. You'd look and see, my goodness, a three-bin sink to work at in the kitchen. You know, that's when we had all the people working. I'd give them each a sink to work in. But it's wonderful. And then the lovely counter here. And man, oh man, it's so beautiful for serving and so beautiful for doing everything. And then you say to the person, "Isn't that is a nice kitchen. We really like it too. I'm sorry that it was so dirty." "What? I hadn't even noticed." "Oh yeah, I guess there are some dishes out there." They looked right past it, because what they wanted to see was the beauty of that kitchen. Now, we look at the fireplace over there, and in the evening, Ingeborg goes over there and makes us a nice fire. And I look at the fireplace before she makes it, and I think, okay. And then 10 minutes later, the fire is roaring away, beautiful, charming, and we're all sitting around the fire there and enjoying it before supper. It's quite beautiful, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you look at the fireplace, you say, "Oh, look, it's black, and inside are ashes, and the clock is up above there, you know, with the heat coming up on the clock, and and then the stone of the background of the fireplace, and look at on top of the mantle. Those things are not in geometric proportions. They're just sort of set here and there, you know. But it's beautiful, you know. And you look at our backyard, and you see, where's the fence? Well, the fence is intermingled with the bushes. You hardly even know that it's there, except when Rex wants to get out and go chase something, he just leaps right over it as though it's not there, too.
Anymore.
Oh, it's been fixed? Oh, good. So these are things you look and you don't even see. Now, when was it fixed?
2 days ago.
Because I was out a couple of days ago looking at it, and I think perhaps it hadn't been done yet. But it's nice. Now, when we look at things in this world, we have wonderful things to see. Now, another thing, what is true? What do you think is true? I think that anything you tell me is true. If you tell me that it's going to rain tonight, I think that's true. If you tell me that Rex took my stocking and took it outside and played with it in the puddle, I'd say, oh, that guy, you know. And it may not be true at all. But if you say it's true, I believe it. Now, you see, I have no trouble with that, no confusion with that. Because if I believe everything that everybody tells me, I'm a happy guy. If people start telling me things and I become incredulous and I say, oh, that can't be true. That's beyond imagination. Now, have you ever read The Life and Teachings of the Master of the Far East? Would you say some of the things in there were incredulous? They were hard to believe. Do you know? When you're reading that and you're in the adventure, it's very true. There is no doubt that that's happening. There's no doubt that it could happen, and there's no doubt that it's happening. You see, that's when you live a life based upon everything being true. And you don't have to worry. If something is not true that somebody says is true, that's their fault. As far as you're concerned, it's true. And they may say, well, there's a car waiting for you out in front, and you go out there and there's no car, and you say that's not true, but it was true. Somewhere there's a car out in front. It may be within the next, the closest 50 miles, you know, but somewhere there's a car out there. And that's wonderful. But you see, that's the thing that when we believe, what difference does it make whether it's true or not?
That's right.
The only, unless you have to depend upon it for something. You say the dinner's on the table, and you lie it to me every night. I come in the house here, sitting at the fireplace, enjoying it, and say, supper's ready. And I look at the table, there's nothing on it yet. And I come sit at the table, and that's 2 or 3 minutes before you get done serving it, you know. I mean, what do you think this is? I believe you when you said, supper's ready. And it's on, but you didn't say it was on the table, so I guess you gave yourself a little bit of an out there. Now, what are you going to find? Have you ever looked for something that you didn't know where it was, and you said, I wonder? Well, we all have gone through that. You know, I love Heinz. Heinz is our student from Switzerland and now New Zealand. And Heinz is a big lover. And Heinz would be here visiting us, he'd be a monk on campus. And he'd go to town and spend money that he shouldn't spend. He'd take it out of his great vault of money, and he would have dinner, and he shouldn't be having dinner there. And he'd go into the restaurant, and he'd take the other monks who were with him and you know, just have a ball, have a good time, and buy dinner for them and buy whatever the dinner included. And then he'd come home and he forgot his wallet. He left it sitting on the table, left it sitting on the seat, left it, you know, full of money and full of his credit cards and everything else. And what happens? In his consciousness, people call up and say, you left your wallet here. And I say, oh, thank you, I'll come down again. No, I'll bring it up to you. And so they bring it up to him, and they look around here, and they see the place, and then they say, I said, let me give you a reward. Oh, no. Here, they drove all the way up here and back and so forth and didn't even want a reward. But you see, now that's not really finding it because you never lost it. But when you can turn within and know the truth, and know all of the information you want, that's kind of nice. Seek it. How do you seek things? You seek things by saying what? Louder, please.
I have it.
Yeah, I have it. Exactly. You seek things by saying, I have it. If you say, I haven't got it, that's not seeking, is it? You say, well, what are you going to do about it? Well, I have to say, it's no place around. But you seek things by saying, I have it. And when you say, I have it, then it is yours. Sylvia did that with her purse when she was a little girl. She was just a little girl, about 16, 17, on the train, and she had her purse with her, and she was so excited riding on the train, so excited. She left her purse on the train, and the train was going through Switzerland into Germany, was it?
Italy,
on the way to Italy. And when she realized she left it there, she asked the station master, you know, what can she do? And the station master said, you no longer have that purse. It's gone. It is gone. And she says, no, it is not. That's my purse. And that's my money in there. He says, how much money you got in there? She says, 30 Swiss francs. $30, you know. And so that was a lot to that girl. She had earned it. And she was not going to release it. She was not going to say that it's lost or stolen. And lo and behold, it came back to her. But you see, if we don't play the game, if we're going to say it's lost, it's stolen, that's it, no more, then we've already given up on it. But if we say it's missing, it'll show up. Heinz must have surely thought everything he was missing, as he did that 5 or 6 times that I know. What an amazing guy. Now, here's our last word for this session, grow. How do we grow? How do we grow in body size, in mind size, in spiritual development? How do we grow in anything?
Inside.
That's true. Now you say, well, look at how your arms are getting longer and longer. You know, it's coming from the inside. You're not adding pieces on to it. You know? And everything does. It comes right from the inside. And it's really beautiful. I was reading a story here by this Dr. George Bichti, and it's called Ordered to Return. And when he was 18, he was in the Army. And he was on the base. And in the process of being on the base, the young officers used poor judgment. And they made the kids sit in the cold, just a few degrees above zero weather, because some of them talked. And so they made them sit out there with wet clothing on and wet everything, and a couple of guys got pneumonia, a couple of guys got flu, and the whole sick bay was filled with all these people from that one guy's poor judgment. Well, this kid, he got pneumonia, and he was in the hospital, and he died. And he didn't want to die, of course, and so he died, and then he got out of his body. I mean, he left, and he was walking around, and he's flying around, and then he went to different places, and he was trying to go and tell his mom and dad that he wasn't going to be home for Christmas because they were expecting him in a couple of days, and so forth. And then he said, why is it that people see me and they don't see me, that I walk right through them and go right through doors and stuff? And so he bumped into a nice guy, and this nice guy saw him and recognized him. And this nice guy said, come with me, you know. And so he took him to 4 different levels of consciousness. And the guy's name, this fellow said, is Jesus the Christ. And he says, he doesn't look like any of the paintings. He's a fantastically strong 33-year-old man, 6'3" tall, 2 inches tall. He has a beautiful brownish auburn hair, and there's a whole lot of things about him, and very beautiful light shining on him, and you know, that's what the book was there. And so the kid said, when he was shown the 4th level of consciousness, he says, this is okay, I can stay here. And Jesus said, no. He said, I merely showed you these things so that you will know. And so then he took him back. But then he left him, and he had to find his body by himself. And so he was searching for his arm hanging out of from under the sheet with his watch on and his ring, you know, that he knew he had. And so he finally found it. He finally found it, and then he got in his body, and the light got brighter in the room, and the nurse says, "Well, welcome back. You know, you've been gone for 9 hours, 8 or 9 hours, and you were dead." He was pronounced dead twice. And so he spent his whole life being a medical doctor and psychiatrist and telling people all about his inner journey, that journey that took him into this growing experience that really illumined him. And it's good. It's good. I think that the book has good content. It has good ideas. It's a little overkill on the Jesus bit, you know. But the only thing that I miss in the book is a little bit of warmth. Because he's so proper, trying to be scientific and trying to say that these are things that have scientific basis to them and stuff like that. And in the process, he lost the warmth. Mm-hmm. And when you lose the warmth, then you lost what's called humanity. Mm-hmm. If I don't write for humanity with warmth and charm and love and smiles and laughter, who cares? Who cares what I have? But when I write with charm and warmth and love, then my seminars, they go over just like a wow. And people are laughing all the time. I don't even know I'm making a joke. I'm just telling happy things and telling charming things and telling things that happened. And they find that very hilarious. And so that's wonderful. But of course, that's what it is when you grow spiritually and you grow in every other way. You just do what comes naturally and you have a lot of fun. So think about that. Good four-letter words. Oh, we could go on with them forever because there's tons of them. But just remember, you don't need the bad ones because they don't describe you. They describe what you are not interested in describing. Mm-hmm. So, have a lovely day and know that the Absolute Philosopher will philosophize with you tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So, see you then, and I love you. I love you.
I love you.